Welcome to the Iran Policy Podcast. I'm Majid. I'm glad to have you with us on our first episode. Today, we'll be discussing the House Resolution 100. This is a resolution in support of the Iranian people's desire for a democratic, secular, and non-nuclear Republic of Iran. It is co-sponsored by the majority of the U.S. House of Representatives. This resolution comes against the backdrop of 7 months of nationwide protests in Iran, with people demanding regime change. Joining us to discuss the importance of this resolution is Dr. Ramesh Sepehrad from the Organization of Iranian American Communities. Thank you, Dr. Sepehrad, for being with us today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Sepehrad, let's begin the conversation to give our viewers a bit of detail about the HRES 100. Can you tell us a bit but the resolution and what it contains?
Yeah, I think that's a very important question to really discuss, because this resolution, it's one of the most important milestone of the Iranian American community's activity over the last few weeks. The resolution itself has a very strong title, which essentially expresses the U.S. Congress support for Iranian uprising and their call for a non-nuclear secular republic, Iran. If you were to look at all of the signatories of the resolution, you can see that there is a very strong presence of the House of Representatives leadership who have signed on to this resolution. For example, if you look at some of the statistics that I have here, we have about 11 committee chairs that have signed on to this resolution, 60 subcommittee chairs that have signed on to the resolution, including the chair of the Middle East subcommittee, and then 28 foreign affairs member, foreign affairs committee member, whose obviously focus is on U.S. policy and the foreign affairs issues for the United States government, that have signed on to this resolution. And I think if you kind of look at it from both parties' perspective, obviously, the majority of the House of Representatives is now within the Republican leadership, but we have some very strong, very powerful ranking member from the Democratic side of the House. So again, this particular resolution has such a strong bipartisan voice, which is quite unprecedented in U.S. Congressional history, to be achieved such a strong bipartisan in such a short period of time. So I'm so proud of the work that the Iranian American communities have done. And again, as I said, this was a significant milestone for us to be able to do this in support of the uprising and the ongoing protests inside Iran.
So you mentioned the protests, and as I said in the intro, this is happening against the backdrop of ongoing protests in Iran. So what do you think is the impact of this resolution on these protests, and how can it help the people of Iran who have made their demands clear in the slogans that they're chanting in the streets?
Yeah, I think this has a direct impact to express the solidarity, bipartisan solidarity of the U.S. Congress, what we call a united voice of the U.S. Congress in support of the Iranian people. So I am kind of reminded of some of the remarks that Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, Democrat from Texas, who in her remarks on the day that we were announcing the majority, she spoke directly to the people of Iran. She told them, you're not alone. We're standing here with you. The Iranian American community are here. We're in solidarity with your effort. And many members of Congress who came and addressed that, the hearing and the briefing that we had as we announced the majority, even it repeated the slogans that the people of Iran were chanting in the streets of, whether it was Tehran or other cities in Balochistan and Kurdistan. And I think I'm reminded of Congressman Weber, who was very, very clear in his message that this particular resolution is essentially reflecting the message of Iranian people that we want to move forward. And he recited the chant of the Iranian people who said, down with the dictators, be it the Shah or the Mullah. And he said, this is Iran's denunciation of the previous monarchy dictatorship and the current dictatorship of the mullahs. And we stand with the Iranian people because they want to move forward. They have 100 years of struggle against the various forms of dictatorships. And this is the voice of Congress who stands with the people of Iran. So I think in going back to your question, in terms of the direct impact, the message was broadcasted into Iran. The message was very clear for the people of Iran. But the other measure of impact of this particular resolution is the reaction of the Iranian regime. If you see the Iranian officials, the Iranian, I guess the religious figures who attend the prayers, the Friday's prayers, who are essentially the representatives of Khamenei, Iran's supreme leader, they all spoke about how they are, you know, they're denouncing this move by the United States, and obviously in their own language and in their own terms. It really tells you how this particular House resolution has had a spot with the regime, and their reaction speaks for itself. So again, I would say two different impacts. One is for the people of Iran, and the other one is for the regime in power there.
Absolutely makes sense. And it's important that while, you know, regardless of what's happening in the actual policies that governments are implementing, to have this voice and have the solidarity, seeing the representatives of the people expressing their support for the people of Iran. So I guess it makes a lot of sense that how this will impact the people inside Iran who are continuing their protests despite the repression, despite the violence of the Iranian regime's security forces. Now let's move on to how this will affect policy. So U.S. officials, we've seen them express their support for the uprisings at different levels, but the administration, the U.S. administration, has not yet endorsed regime change, which is the clear demand of the people of Iran. They're still pursuing diplomacy. They're still pursuing the nuclear talks. Do you think the HRES 100 will have an impact on Washington's policy in the near or long term?
I think if the way to measure that is to really compare this resolution to other resolutions, because we have to remember there are three resolutions in U.S. Congress. One was the House Resolution 100, which reached the absolute majority, just as Chairman McClintock referred to it as the absolute majority within such a short period of time. So we have that resolution, which offers a very clear policy framework when it comes to Iran and the U.S. policy on Iran. We've had other resolution. For example, there was another resolution that was introduced by Congresswoman Claudia Tenney, who essentially was giving Iranian people the sense of Congress, the symbolic support of the U.S. Congress for the support of the Iranian people's uprising. And then the third resolution is about Mahsa Act, which has some very specific sanctions, and it also has a reference to some very important events when it comes to the brutality and the behavior of the Iranian regime, including the 1988 massacre of the political prisoners. When you compare these three resolutions, the only one that offers a political and a policy framework is House Resolution 100. So I think the administration has everything as it's at its disposal to really adopt a firm policy. Now, if the question is, will the administration ever officially adopt what we call a regime change policy? I'm not sure we're ever going to get there, because when it comes to the issue of regime change, it is on the Iranian people. The people of Iran and their opposition and the coalition with the National Council of Resistance have essentially a platform and a roadmap to bring this regime down. So I think a lot of people hesitate to really frame the U.S. policy in context of the regime change because of the fact that the U.S. policy has always been, you know, it's going to be the America that's going to change this regime. But that's not what the case is in this situation. This situation is the people of Iran want to change this regime. And there is a very particular clause in the House Resolution 100, which recognizes the rights of the Iranian people to overthrow this regime. That is essentially the regime change that the people of Iran want. So going back to your question, I would say that the American government, the U.S. administration, has everything now to move forward on a firm policy on Iran. And that firm policy should really start with not just additional sanction, but enforcing the sanctions that are already in place. And to your point, when it comes to diplomatic relations with Iran, United States should really call off any talks and all talks with the Iranian regime and call the JCPOA deal as a dead deal. And I think the rest would follow. What we see in Europe right now is very much ahead of the United States in some ways, and I think from that perspective, it would be a very powerful coalition of the West to stand with the people of Iran in a meaningful way and their firm policy in isolating the regime, and the rest, when it comes to regime change, is on the people of Iran.
Absolutely. And so you said this, and I guess it's as you said, it's really up to the people of Iran. They have all the capacity, everything they need to bring that regime change. And it really depends on the West, on how they stand and whether they're going to isolate the regime and let the people and recognize the right of the people to do that. And I guess your own efforts, the OIAC, kind of reflects that kind of independence that the capacity that the people of Iran have to bring about their own policy. Absolutely. So I wanted to use that as a segue to ask you the next question, which is, tell us a bit about your efforts behind the scenes of this resolution. When did the OIAC get started on this, and how did you manage to reach this achievement in the first 50 days of the 118th Congress? I mean, so it's really an unprecedented achievement, I guess. Correct me if I'm wrong, but how did you manage to do this?
Absolutely. And I think, first of all, let me just say how proud we are as Iranian American community to be able to do this on behalf of the people of Iran. This is the least we can do, because when you see protesters, men, women, and young Iranians in the streets fighting for their rights with their lives and willing to sacrifice for democracy and freedom, this is the least we can do. So our motivation and our inspiration comes from inside Iran. But just to give you a little bit of a context in terms of how our organization works, our organization has about 40 chapters across the United States. So all of our chapters have campaigned their members of Congress. And you have to remember, this is the community that is former political prisoners are part of this community. Mothers and fathers who have lost their loved one over the last four decades under this regime are part of this community. So when they reach out to their members of Congress, it is the authentic voice of change that moves the members of Congress to stand with the people of Iran. It's the authentic message that really ties of the experiences of the former political prisoners that are now in the United States and the political prisoners that are in Iran, that it is connected together and conveys the message of the Iranian people. That is our asset. This is how we work. And now you ask me about how fast and how unprecedented this particular resolution was. We had some internal conversations about the number of hours that we put in bringing this this resolution together. And I can't even put a number on it, because to some extent, it felt like it was almost like a 24/7 effort by our community members, whether they were working in their home state or they were coming to Washington, D.C. to meet with their members in Washington. But I think the fact that the resolution itself was actually announced in February. And within 5 weeks, it reached the majority. Now, why it reached the majority in such a unprecedented rapid pace is because of what is happening inside Iran. And I think the synergy between the communities that we have in US and the people inside Iran in the streets, whether it's every Friday in Balochistan, people of Zahedan and multiple cities in Balochistan or in Kurdistan or in Tehran or in Khorasan or Khuzestan, all four corners of Iran, their protests, their slogan, their rallies, their strike, their continuous presence in challenging this regime, whether it's the old and the young, men and women, girls, all of these efforts is the synergy of that with what we did inside the US Congress that came together and made this a significant and unprecedented bipartisan congressional support. As I said, Chairman McClintock, who is one of the main sponsors, the Republican main sponsor from the Republican Party, and then Congressman Brad Sherman, the Democrat sponsor, they both recognized how this particular resolution reached an absolute majority. I think our latest number, the day that it was announced, it was about 222. I think the latest number has gone over 227. So the numbers are still increasing. And that really speaks to the sacrifice and to the political will and the power of the Iranian people in the streets that gives us the inspiration and motivates the members of Congress to reach this particular milestone and this significant absolute majority.
Absolutely, absolutely makes sense. And you said it's a 24/7 effort, and how it ties in with the relentless protests that we're seeing ongoing in Iran. So let me jump to another direction here. So when you read this resolution, anyone who reads this resolution, they're going to know that this is in full support of the Iranian people's uprising. So while you were working on this, did anyone oppose this resolution since it was introduced? And if yes, who were they? And did they manage to sway the opinion of lawmakers who sponsored the resolution?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And as you know, given the development and given the struggle of freedom and democracy in our homeland, Iran, you know, the opportunists, the people that are trying to leverage and exploit the message of the Iranian regime for their own Iranian people and support the Iranian regime and support their own political agenda were very, very noisy this time around. This was not the first time that we had a House resolution that has reached an absolute majority. In fact, within the first 100 days of the Biden administration, we had another resolution, which was very, very strong support. And at that time, it was under the Democratic House of Representatives, not a Republican House of Representatives. So again, but the noise that we experienced and saw this time was very different. And it was very politically motivated. And I can tell you that it was a combination of the remnant of the previous regime, the pro-Pahlavi, as well as the Iran lobby, the Iranian regime's lobby in Washington. And what was striking is how their message was the same. What was striking is how they have aligned, which previously, at least the pro-Pahlavi faction was trying to keep up the facade that we're against the regime, we want democracy, we want freedom. But this time around, everyone kind of tipped their own hand and show the world that they really are on the side of the Iranian regime, not the people of Iran. So I can tell you on one conversation I had with one of the representatives who attended our briefing when we announced the majority, he said that he had a call from a pro-Pahlavi person to his office, and he actually spoke to him himself. And the person was going through the list of all the reasons why his office should not be supporting this resolution. And the member said, you know, what you're sharing with me is no different than what the Iranian regime is telling me. And he said, that ended the conversation and I hang up the phone. So I think from that perspective, it was really, really clear that despite the fact that they tried to create the noise, despite the fact that they even spammed an email and in hundreds of emails through their bots and trolls, sending to the members of Congress and their offices, none of the members of Congress backed down, and they stood firm and they said, this is the right resolution because it offers a policy framework. This is not denunciation of Iranian regime's atrocity. This is not declaring support for the people of Iran. It is actually offering a path forward so that America can step in and support the people of Iran in a meaningful way. So I think if you put all of these things together, you see how all of these noise, all of these groups out there that try to derail the efforts and of our community members and distract the attention of the members of Congress and obviously serve the Iranian regime, they all failed to do so. And, you know, one thing I do want to mention in this context is anyone who thinks that Iran is going to go back to monarchy by lobbying US Congress is gravely mistaken. Why? Because they have to remember this country, United States, fought the colonial monarchy of the British government at the time to achieve its own democracy and republic. So the you know, American Revolution stands on that history. So for them to think that they could actually lobby the US Congress and convince the members of Congress who believe in American Constitution, who believe in American history and are able to turn the page in favor of Iranian monarchy, they are mistaken and they're not going to be successful. And you know, they are, you know, these lobbyists and these opportunists that we witness coming to US Congress or calling members of Congress are very clever. They're trying to convey the message in the context of, yes, we want democracy. Yes, we want freedom. But when it comes to the word republic, that is where we have the differences. So, and that has been, that's been the differentiating factor on our message for the people of Iran versus their message for their own political agenda and the Iranian regime. It is the word republic, which means that the sovereignty is with the people of Iran and their vote for their own form of government. That's what we're honoring, that's what we're advocating for, and that's what the members of Congress supported. So I think that, quite frankly, is to really decipher the noise that was launched against this resolution. With the word republic, we were able to really silence that noise and continue our effort in support of the people of Iran and their call for non-nuclear, secular republic in Iran, which essentially is reflected in the House Resolution 100.
Exactly, absolutely. So the HRES 100 mentions the 10-point plan of Mrs. Maryam Rajavi, the president-elect of the National Council of Resistance of Iran. Why was this clause included, and what is its significance?
The significance of it is because it offers a path forward. And it was included because the members of Congress really wanted to make sure that this particular resolution is not just taking into account the crimes by the Iranian regime, taking into account the support that needs to be declared for the people of Iran and the ongoing protests inside Iran. But it's really important to say, what do we not want and what do we want as it is reflected in the 10-point plan by Maryam Rajavi. So the reason this was included is to provide an alternative and a policy framework as a path forward on what the Iran could be and should be. And I think it was one of the important pillars of this resolution, and that's why it was included in the House Resolution 100.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense. And exactly as you said, so it's clear that what the Iranian people don't want, they want, and they want regime change. They don't want this regime. And so I guess what you say makes sense, because there's always this concern that what happens when this regime is gone. And I guess that 10-point plan provides an excellent framework of exactly what's going to replace this regime. And I've seen lawmakers describe this, U.S. lawmakers compare the 10-point plan to the values that are enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. They call it Jeffersonian. So it really is something that represents democracy in its entirety. So what are the next steps for your organization after you've reached majority on HRES 100?
Yeah, well, obviously, our organization work is not done. It's going to continue. We are going to be, campaigning on many different fronts as the, protests inside Iran continues. We will be conducting our solidarity campaign, whether it's through exhibitions that we hold or the meetings that we're going to have with members of Congress. And again, our message is also going to be heard in U.S. Senate. It's not just in House of Representatives. You know, you mentioned that how the 10-point plan by Maryam Rajavi resonates the Jeffersonian values. We've had other members of Congress that have referred to it as the Bill of Rights for the people of Iran. And just a few days ago, in an event that we had in U.S. Senate, Senator Jean Sheehan actually held up Maryam Rajavi's 10-point plan. She actually cited in an event and read through Maryam Rajavi's rights for women in Iran. And she said, this is it. This is what democracy sounds to me. So again, our effort will continue to happen in U.S. Congress. Our effort will continue to happen in the streets of Washington, whether it's the protests and the rallies and the exhibitions that we're going to be having in order to raise public awareness and in order to continue to do everything that we can to support the uprising and the ongoing protests inside Iran. You know, we are very much inspired by the slogan that's coming from inside Iran that says, this is not a protest. This is a revolution. And we feel that with our ongoing campaign, we're going to be part of this revolution, even though we're not there with them. Our minds and our hearts and our efforts are with Iranian people every day, and we'll continue to be their voice here in Washington.
So HRES 100 also mentions the Iranian regime's malign activities in Albania and the Balkans. Can you explain a bit about the importance of this particular clause?
Yeah, this clause was actually very, very important for U.S. Congress because they have been monitoring Iran's malign activities in Albania. And they, in fact, had a very specific language in this resolution praising the Albanian government for arresting some of the Iranian agents that were plotting against the presence of the Ashraf III in Albania. And I think when we announced our majority, one of the member of Congress who is the head of the Albanian caucus in U.S. House of Representatives spoke about that issue. And he said, we will continue to monitor the situation in Albania. We will continue to work with the Albanian government in their effort to make sure that the safety and security of Ashraf III is in place. And he welcomed this particular language in the House Resolution 100. And so I think it was really, really important to include all aspects of the Iranian regime's threats against the Iranian opposition, whether in Albania or in France or elsewhere, that this resolution accounted for.
Absolutely. And you stated it perfectly. So let me finish with a personal question. I know that in addition to your activities with the OIAC, you and your colleagues at this organization, you have your own full-time jobs. So you have a lot on your plate. You have to juggle between different tasks. This is why we truly appreciate that having you on this program, on this episode with us. So how do you manage to make all of this possible, to wait, arrange, meet, talk with members of Congress, their assistants, advisors, and everything, and then walk them through everything about your goals, and at the same time being able to do whatever you have to do, you know, your own work and everything? So how do you make this happen?
Honestly, this is the least we all can do. And I think, again, our organization, OIAC, OIAC, it's all volunteer based. We don't have paid members. We don't have paid staff. So we all work on every day. Our number one priority is how do we move the needle on behalf of the Iranian people? So you asked me about my day job and you asked me about my work at OIAC. I always often tell my colleagues, you know, my day job pays my bill. This work pays my heart. This is what really means to me as a person that comes from Iran, as a person whose family were persecuted by the Iranian regime, as a person who knows the suffering of the Iranian people firsthand. So I can't forget. I can't, even though I consider myself as Iranian American and I lived in the United States more, you know, most of my life, I can't forget where I come from. And this is the least we can do. And I think I'm speaking for all of our OIAC communities and all of my colleagues. We volunteer our work because it pays the heart. and it pays the mind, and it's the least we can do for our homeland, Iran. It's the least I can do for women inside Iran, for young girls, for men and women inside Iran, for all of our different nationalities, that really creates this rainbow of Iran as a country. The Kurds, the Baluch, the Turkmen, the Lors, the Khuzestan, and every single one of our Iranian nationalities that come under the banner of the Lion and Sun. This is what we are, inspired by. So again, I'm humbled by your question, but honestly, I must say, I this is the least we all can do.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you very much. And I guess you stated perfectly, this continuity between what's happening inside Iran and across the globe, the Iranian resistance, the great family of the Iranian resistance, which has been carrying out these activities for the past four decades. So thank you very much for being on this program. Thank you for sharing your insights, the experience, and good luck on your endeavors as you move forward with your future activities, and we'll be following them.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was so great to be with you.
Thank you. We'll be with you on our next episode. Thank you very much for being with us.